And we're back. Thanks for staying tuned to WVFF 97.7 FM and now more true crime in the Lowcountry.
What Frank was trying to say is that they have a past, especially during 2015 and 2016 and into 2017, of total disregard for any kind of traffic laws that are in the state of South Carolina and in Hampden County.
So just where we are right now, we know that them being engaged in reckless vehicular homicide, which is a statutory charge in South Carolina, is something that they clearly...
You're talking about them being a person of interest in that, yes.
No, but this is conduct that would be consistent with people that speed, do drugs, drink, and show mm-hmm. reckless disregard for the laws. One of the reasons that speeding, getting drunk and operating a motor vehicle, et cetera, is against the law is that it predictably leads to reckless vehicular homicide, which is how Stephen Smith lost his life, it seems to me. I think that that's what every pathologist who's looked at has agreed that it was a hit and run, which is a reckless vehicular homicide in the state of South Carolina. So these guys, why have they not been charged?
Well, and by the way, just to add gasoline onto all of this, you can add in attempted murder that Patrick was charged with that was reduced to assault and battery in the first degree. And that case was by the, you guys are the 14th Circuit solicitor down there?
Yes, right? Duffy Stone.
Yeah, 14th solicitor.
Okay, so and Corey Fleming represented him. Corey Fleming represented him in that, right, in that case.
Corey Fleming represented him because this is backstory behind this. Is what Patrick told me is that he lived with his great-grandmother, and when he got into this trouble, he was good friends, almost. Patrick would describe one of his best friends was Paul Murdoch. And so when he went to Paul and told him of the information and what happened, he wanted Paul's advice through his dad, Alex Murdoch, on what he should do. So he and his grandmother went down to PMPD and met with Alex, according to Patrick. And they had a meeting with Alec, and Alec recommended one and only Corey Fleming. And Corey Fleming, as everybody knows, or if you don't know, Corey Fleming was the college roommate of Alec Murdoch, and he was a defense attorney, so there wasn't too many defense attorneys down there in the Beaufort area and Hampton, but Corey Fleming was a defense attorney. And Corey Fleming is also the person that is sitting in federal prison because of his dealing with Alec in these financial crimes that both of them are doing time for. So the charges are not dropped. The 14th Circuit solicitor has just decided back in 2018 that they are not going to move forward with the prosecution of this case. Now, with the background of this case, and when it was at first called attempted murder, dropped down to assault and battery in first degree, was that Sean and Patrick were driving in Sean's vehicle and came upon somebody who owed Sean or Patrick, I think it was Patrick, owed them money. I believe it was for drugs. But regardless, the argument ensued, and then Patrick went back to the truck, according to Patrick, and he shot a gun in the direction of the people that he was arguing with. Didn't shoot at them, shot in their direction. Maybe he hit a street sign or something along
that. And oddly enough, law enforcement said you can't do that. Can I ask you, I just want to be very clear about this. Patrick shoots a gun in the general direction of somebody that I just want this distinction, that he claims owes him money because of a drug transaction, or that he owes them money because of a drug. Okay, so so Patrick Wilson is somehow involved in the sale and distribution of drugs, allegedly. At least because of the circumstances of what you just mentioned.
I wouldn't say that he's a drug dealer whatsoever. What I'm saying is that someone owed him
money. Well, I think if you just do it once, I think doing it once is considered the sale and distribution. I didn't say he was a drug dealer. I said he was involved in the sale and distribution of drugs. And that would be clear from, even if you only do it once. It's not that you have to do it 10 times. So that's interesting that when you're talking about who might have motive related to sale and distribution of drugs and other people that, you know, Frank doesn't want us to mention, this is enormous. Just every part of what Patrick Wilson is talking about here has enormous implications. And you got to wonder how our media, I don't wonder, but our media certainly got the story incomplete. Whether they got it completely wrong, I don't know, but they certainly left out major motivating factors and major chunks of important information in covering any aspect of this up through and including today, frankly. You know, I mean, we have people that are so convinced.
I think drugs have played a major part in this and, of course, in his life. I mean, he even told me in the interview, he didn't tell me a name, but once he was at a drug dealer's house, he said, according to Patrick, the police are involved in the cover-up of it, that he saw a police officer come over to the drug dealer's house, and the drug dealer gave the police officer an envelope. And I said, an envelope of what? And he looked at me like, what do you think? Money. I was like, oh, okay. So, I mean, that's what he alleges. And that was one of those times where when he just kind of told me something off the cuff that comes off as very believable. But that's something that he witnessed and did tell me. So, you know, it goes up the ladder, so to speak. But these two seem to get into a lot of trouble when it comes to traffic and driving and disregard for laws.
Do you want to forward to...
Oh, wait a minute. Wait, you forgot to mention and dropped what? Cases or cases that weren't prosecuted.
We don't know. They may have been settled, though, Frank. They may have been settled. We need to check into that.
No, the firearms case that was bumped down from attempted murder to what, an assault charge? That one was dropped. That one wasn't prosecuted.
Yeah, it's still. What's interesting is it still lingers. It could be prosecuted. But I think that Jim could say that there are a lot of cases, all kinds of cases in South Carolina. I'm sure all across this country that are just, maybe law enforcement doesn't have the resources or the funding or the manpower, whatever. But they, I mean, I hate to say this, but I think people get, you know, unalived all the time, and they get away with it. But, you know, back when this is happening in 2015, 2016, there's no other context for this. Nobody's looking any other direction at all. And Stephen Smith's unaliveness didn't attract enough attention to draw any public interest really at all. I mean, the public interest in his unalivedness came much later. But since there were so many, you know, everybody talked about, oh, boo-hoo, you know, we need answers. Well, there were a lot of answers there if you had, got off your rear end and gone out and investigated. And Jim has investigated this, and other news sources didn't. They just sort of made assumptions. That's why I care. That's why from the beginning of this podcast, I care whether we call it a homicide or a murder, because I don't want to be inaccurate, and I don't want to be spreading more misinformation, because the real accurate information, first of all, Jim has busted his rear end to produce it. Let's honor that. And it's so interesting. It's so fascinating. But anyway, the night of July
8th? Sure.
What?
But I think another thing to note here is he being Patrick, it kind of follows him. So he's moved to Greenville, South Carolina. And there was a case that I was following. Actually, he's got two cases pending. Or wait, let me repeat that. He has one case pending. He had two cases pending. One case was an assault charge that was supposed to be disposed of last month in October. And when I went back to look at what had the disposition of the case, it was completely gone. Like, it's missing. It's not there anymore. So he's got one other case that's pending. That's for actually 2 days from now.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm just speculating here. Maybe Frank has some ideas about this. If I'm actually an informant for law enforcement, and so what makes me a good informant is I've been involved in this kind of activity, so I actually can name names and be useful. You know, like, I personally could not be an informant for anybody because I have no involvement in this. So let's just say that person X is an informant who is valuable to law enforcement from time to time, or has been valuable to law enforcement, and then continues this kind of activity that gets him constantly, you know, he's constantly having run-ins with the law. Could that be why records are expunged? Because shouldn't a criminal record still exist in some... what are you looking at, by the way? Are you looking at the e-file? You don't have... This isn't on PACER, is it? This is on e-file, isn't it?
I'm looking at sccourtcases.org. You can look it up by county. And it's just completely gone. He's got one case that's left that's... there's a show cause hearing that's rescheduled, and it's for receiving stolen goods of $2,000 or more.
Because I knew you were doing this, and I looked at the other case was there because I looked a couple of months ago, but it never occurred to me. I may have screen grabbed a couple of documents from the case, but I didn't expect to have this conversation where it disappeared. Something about court records, though, like the 298 case, the Bogus Satterfield case that Eric Bland filed, completely disappeared from the Hampton County Public Index. That's always just creepy. But there are legitimate reasons why even civil cases sometimes disappear. And sometimes it's because of an order of the judge, and there's legitimate reasons, whatever they might be. So it's not always nefarious, but it does seem kind of odd. Doesn't it seem odd? I mean, Frank, does it seem odd to you that this criminal case disappeared?
It's this confidential informant thing.
Yeah.
Let me tell you historically what goes on. And this is, and I'm generalizing with these confidential informants. Both confidential informants and, I'll go as far as to say, undercover investigators, both commit crimes that would otherwise be prosecuted if not for the value of the information that they purvey. Is that clear enough?
Yeah.
All right.
So somebody further up the chain in law enforcement says that they make a calculation that the information these individuals have is actually more valuable to society than prosecuting them for crimes that it's known that they have committed.
All right.
Okay,
now,
I get that. It's in the public's interest.
Also, confidential informants.
Yeah.
You wouldn't call them a confidential informant if they weren't providing information for the benefit of law enforcement, for the benefit of law enforcement, as opposed for the benefit of law enforcement committing a crime. Is that clear? Confidential, confidential informant can do two things. It can provide information information that'll lead to an arrest and conviction, or a confidential informant can benefit an investigator, enabling that investigator to circumvent the law.
Oops.
Or, what What if you have information on police officers that are involved in the in drug activity?
Hey, Jim, didn't I just say that without getting my ass burned in here in Carlton County?
Yes, you did. Frank, I applaud you. I applaud you. So put this on the scoreboard. The one time I'm not critical of you for what you just said. Okay, so
let's go back to Stephen Smith. Let's talk back to Stephen Smith. In my article that's up now at crimeandcask.com or ccnewsnetwork.com, Patrick Wilson, in my interview with him, flat out denies any involvement with anything to do with Stephen Smith. But one of the big things that has come up in this investigation, not only with the South Carolina Highway Patrol, but also, who was that investigator that had that conversation with Fitz News?
Andy Savage was representing Sandy Smith, Stephen Smith's mother, pro bono. And so Andy hires Steve Peterson to investigate Stephen Smith. And Steve, and you and I talked, Will Foulkes does a taped interview that's still on YouTube with Steve Peterson. Netflix talks to him, some other, I think he said HBO would talk to him. So he's a media personality. And then I had a couple hour-long conversations with Steve Peterson, and you, Jim, and I, about 2 months ago or whatever, had about a hour, half-hour conversation with him, too. So anyway, he's interesting, but he very narrowly and almost obsessively narrowly viewed what his job was and did not look 2 inches beyond the boundaries he had set up. So anytime what he stumbled over bled into anything else, he just let it lay. He just ignored it, basically, which is annoying at best.
Most people are of the belief in law enforcement and in the investigation, including the South Carolina Highway Patrol, that Stephen was hit by a side-view mirror of a vehicle, truck, etc. And so I want to address that because this is a very important piece of information that I have in the article online that Patrick talked about, and he talked about this in detail, about Sean Conley's side-view mirror on the passenger side, which is where Patrick said he would sit as they would go out hunting for hogs a lot and shooting out of the truck. And so what he described to me was that Hampton, going back to the Hampton police officer, Nick Ginnigan, this time not about the phone call, but Patrick told me that Ginn had contacted both Patrick and Conley early in the investigation, which is interesting because if you remember listening to that call, the Highway Patrol's trying to get a hold of him, and he's like, well, it's going to be kind of hard to get a hold of him. Apparently not for Ginn, because Ginn called up Patrick and Sean, and according to Patrick, he and Nick Ginn were friends. And I was like, I thought you guys were like stepbrothers or something. And he's like, no, not at all. He goes, we're friends. I'm like, well, that's a little odd because there's a quite a big of an age gap, I don't know, in at least 10, 15 years. He goes, I don't know. We just kind of ran into some same circles when it came to hunting and fishing, especially hunting. So he goes, I've hunted with Nick quite a few times. So that was interesting. But anyway, so Nick gets a hold of both he and Sean and wanted them to bring the truck, Sean's truck, to him. And apparently, according to Sean, they drove to what's called the Hampton Restaurant. Are you familiar with that?
No.
Mm-hmm. So the Hampton Restaurant is where Officer Ginn was eating, and according to Patrick, was sitting there. When they drove up, they could see they were like by a window or something, and there was other officers in the Hampton Restaurant where they were eating. And Wilson says, Nick,
and this is Sean's truck that Ginn wants them to bring to him.
Ginn wants to see the side view mirror, and he wants to see Patrick, and he wants to see Sean. So Patrick and Sean Sean drove his vehicle. Patrick came with him. They went to the Hampton restaurant where Ginn was. And he said, this is Patrick. And I quote, Nick came outside, looked at the mirror, and took pictures of it. A few weeks, he says, but a few weeks before Stephen's death, according to Patrick, Patrick, accidentally shot the mirror out with a high-powered 9mm rifle. And Patrick goes on to clarify. He says, but the glass was not shot out of the mirror. No glass on the mirror was broken. It was just a piece of plastic that broke off when it got shot. That's quote-unquote Patrick Wilson, as he says, what happened to the side view mirror? No glass was broken, but a piece of plastic broke off when it got shot. And then Patrick describes that Ginn goes on and says he took photos of the side view mirror. But I've looked in the mate report. I have looked everywhere and cannot find anywhere that these photos have been published in any official document or published anywhere, at least publicly. And I did reach out to former police officer Nick Ginn for a comment, and I received no reply. And so I, when he said that to me, when Patrick said, you know, I accidentally shot it, and I'm thinking to myself, why are you shooting a 9mm high-powered rifle out of a vehicle? And I do believe I even said that kind of laughing, and he says, well, they did that regularly, shot out the window. He says, we'd go out shooting hogs at night on roads, or older roads or fields, he said. And I asked him, I said, well, okay, now he's, at this time, he's 26 years old. But back almost 10 years ago, he was 17. And, you know, but during that time, he's only 26 years old. I asked him, I said, well, how many hogs have you shot in your lifetime? And he responded, he was like, a lot. And I'm like, you know, what's a lot? 10, 20? He's like, oh, no, hundreds. I said, hundreds? He goes, yeah, hundreds. He's 26 years old and has shot hundreds of hogs while driving.
All right. That's not unusual. They're what do you call it? They're very prolific, and they're an invasive species, and they...
I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
No. They create a lot of damage. So...
They certainly do.
Farmers, yeah, I understand that. But what I'm trying to convey is that these guys might shoot 20 hogs in an evening. All right? There may be 30, 40 hogs in a field, and they might shoot 20 of them. And they don't know if they died or not. They shoot a hog, it falls down. They shoot a hog, it falls down. Because the... farmers are so eager to have these hogs destroyed because in one night... I'm saying they shoot a lot of hogs.
I get that. But you know what a hog's favorite field is to go foraging through?
Probably soy.
Corn field.
Yeah, or soy. Corn yeah, field. They like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what was growing... in the field behind Stephen Smith when...
Corn. So, Jim, just because we're coming together. To the end here, okay, but I think your story is absolutely fascinating, but the takeaway here for sure is that this was reckless vehicular manslaughter. A reckless vehicular homicide is what it is. I just looked it up as the South Carolina statute. So it's not murder because there was no malice involved. It's reckless vehicular homicide. So what I don't understand is why wasn't this case, well, it sort of was accurately put to bed, that just nobody was held accountable, which I can see would stick in Sandy Smith's craw. But how did it get amplified into this other craziness? Because your excellent investigation of this makes it pretty clear. I mean, there's more evidence here of what happened than there is of...
No, but you have to look at the evidence. Right. You have to look at the evidence in little buckets, right? So if you start tying this together, you look at Conley, where Stephen Smith was found. The road to get between the road to get from where Patrick Wilson lived on Prince William's Road goes down to a T, and it dead ends into a T, and you take a left and you go down Sandy Run Road to get to Sean Conley's house. They lived about just a couple of miles, less than 3 miles away from each other. But you put this context together in these buckets from 2015 and 2016, that they were just teenagers at the time of Smith's death. They lived miles apart and right in between where Smith's body was found. Then you add in their troubled past and history with local law enforcement, including the open alcohol tickets, numerous traffic violations, and records that we found where Conley was involved in a lot of other legal issues, including hunting violations, criminal trespassing, fishing without a license, and killing antlerless deer. And you add in the fact that these guys were driving recklessly around, according to their traffic violations, recklessly around Hampton and Collison County, allegedly on drugs and drinking, according to Patrick Wilson, and shooting hogs out the window. Now, you just start stacking this up, and this pile's getting pretty high. I don't know if you can. Are you seeing the tree I'm trying to chop here?
Yeah, but
no,
I
agree with you.
The only thing that we have from this is that they lived an incredibly reckless lifestyle.
Yeah,
I think we should continue this because
we got about 7 minutes, 6 or 7 minutes.
Oh, okay.
All right. And
okay.
If you want to put a bow on it, for today at some point? Yeah.
Yeah, sure. That's what I was trying to do. It's like, so you've got both Sean and Patrick and Darrell Williams were, according to Patrick, were brought in to a grand jury that was convened in Columbia, South Carolina. And according to Patrick, he was examined by none other than Creighton Waters.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. All right.
And when was this? When was this? Last summer?
Yeah. Yep. Of course, you know, he's told me, and Patrick says he vehemently denies any involvement in it. But he alleges, anyway, that Patrick Wilson alleges that law enforcement tried to coerce him into making false statements during the convened grand jury. And he told me, quote, Creighton Waters tried intimidating me and tricking me into saying things that weren't true, unquote. According to Wilson, again, he said that, I quote, he showed me all kinds of pictures of Stephen, asking again me what I thought about them. I said I felt sorry for him. And that's what Wilson told me, unquote. So the story that he and Patrick are telling is that on the evening of July of 2015, that he and Sean got together and were going to go on a bender at Patrick's father's house. Remember, Patrick did not live with his father. He lived with his great-grandmother.
This is the evening of July 7th, because Stephen is killed. He dies at around 2 in the morning on July 8th. So on the evening of July 7th, okay.
Yeah, evening of July 7th, Patrick and Sean were going to get together at Patrick's dad's house, which was just a few minutes from where he lived on Prince William's Road. And they were going to go on a bender of what he told me was cocaine, marijuana, and beer. And I asked him, I said, what kind of beer? And he was like, Bud Light. I was like, oh, okay, here we go. So they, according to him, that's what he told me, is that they stayed at his dad's house and got drunk and got high and did coke, and they stayed up all night long. They didn't go to sleep. They were up all night long. And they did leave.
Now, what is Patrick Wilson's dad's name, and where does he live?
His name is David, and he lives in Greenville now, but he did live just a short distance from Patrick at the time. But they both live in Greenville. So you got a 17-year-old with his dad who he doesn't live with. They're doing drugs at his house with his dad, according to Patrick, and drinking a lot. And then they ran out of drugs and were going to go get some more drugs. According to Patrick, they got into Sean's vehicle and they drove dirt roads to go to the drug dealer's house. And during that drive in the morning, they ran into a license check that was run by the Hampton Police Department. This after they had discovered Stephen's body and a perimeter was set up on the roads near there, and they were stopped. And according to him, Wilson said that they stopped, and the officer, I think it was, well, I'm not going to say the officer's name because I've got it, but I don't recall it right now. But the officer checked their license. He certainly knew who they were. And they had a cooler in the back of Sean's pickup truck, and the cooler had moonshine in it. And he says that the officer jumped onto the back of the vehicle and opened the cooler and saw the moonshine, and he took it. And I remember laughing at this. I'm like, wait a minute. Did he have a search warrant? Did he have a reason to do this? He's like, no. I'm like, so they stopped you? They gave you a ticket? He's like, no, he let us go. I'm like, he let you go. You're 17 years old. You're drunk and high. You've been up all night long. You're going to get more drugs, and you're stopped by the police, and you're underage, and they find moonshine in the back of the vehicle that you're driving, and they just let you go. He's like, yep, they just let us go. I'm like, okay. And I said, then what'd you do? He goes, well, then we went to the drug dealer's house. We got more drugs, and we came back. I said, did you encounter them, the police, when you came back? And he's like, no, we went a different way. So he says, we went back to my dad's house and just continued on until we ran out again and fell asleep. That is his story of what happened to him on July 7th and in the morning of July 8th, 2015.
Well, whew. I'll tell you.
The next show we do, I can tell you who he alleges did it.
Well, yeah. Be careful. Yeah,
I'd like to.
Be careful.
I'd like to go forward with this.
Yeah, really, so well. Would I.
We can do it. Jim is careful, and Jim has documented this. I mean, I'm comfortable.
All right, and listen, I want you to really be careful with, you know, with allegations and alleges. Got to throw alleges everywhere.
Yeah.
Because, wow, you're really.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, you really
find out who Patrick Wilson.
You know what the greatest fear is about this podcast? That it's aired out of sequence. This one has to be the first one that we don't, God forbid, air the second before the first. All right. Well, listen, guys, you have me sitting on the edge of my seat.
There's
a lot more to it. I sat down with him for over an hour and a half in August of this summer, and
you're painting an excellent picture of the way life exists here in the Lowcountry. You know, there's the Lowcountry, and there's Buford, and it's a city. But
yeah,
in between Walterboro and Buford, man, it's the country. And
it's the country. I've been there numerous times.
You know, and when you talk about going to somebody's house on a dirt road, well, I would say there's a high percentage of the roads that are dirt roads. So
right.
There's no reason not to go to somebody's house on a dirt road. But listen, I can't thank yous enough. We're hitting about the hour mark here. And
I would say if you just for the listeners, if you want to follow this story and get in more greater detail, go to crimeandcask.com or just Google Crime and Cask, and that's C-A-S-K, and you'll find the Patrick Wilson story. This is the first article I have published, and there's going to be four more articles. Follow me on YouTube. Follow me on TikTok. We're going to talk about this. He was very open and told me a lot of things that not only had to do with Stephen Smith, that deal with the Murdaughs, that deal with the kids from the boat crash. I mean, this thing, it goes in so many directions, Frank, I can't even begin to tell you, but it is powerful. And honestly, if there's anybody from Netflix listening, this is a TV show. I mean, this is a movie. It really is.
No, this is a whole season. Jim, this is a whole season. This is a 10-episode, yeah, I hate to use the word documentary related to Netflix because I think they miss the boat a lot of times, but what you've done is incredible. It's very thorough. It blows all other coverage out of the water. It blows all other coverage combined out of the water. It's monumental and absolutely Netflix.
I've even gone through the Mate Report and went out to the scene where Stephen Smith was
all right, hit. Leave it as a cliffhanger. It's a cliffhanger.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
I'll tell you,
leave it out there.
The inaccuracies of the Mate Report.
All right. There you go. Listen, folks. Whew, you guys are really blowing me away here. You're listening to WVFF 97.7 LPFM. This is Red Brick Patriot Radio, broadcasting from Cottageville, South Carolina. You've been listening to True Crime in the Lowcountry with the illustrious, and we're calling her illustrious at this point, Elaine Greenwood, and the infamous, if not famous, Jim Cask of Crime and Cask. And this is Frank on Target. And Elaine, we are out of here. Talk to you guys later.
Bye, Jim.
All righty.
Absolutely.
All righty.
Okay.
Bye-bye now. Bye.
And that's all the time we have for now on True Crime in the Lowcountry. We hope you've enjoyed our in-depth coverage of the Murdaugh murder trial so far. Don't worry, we'll be back soon to dive even deeper into the case and bring you more chilling stories from the Lowcountry region. We thank you for listening to Veterans for Freedom Radio, the Truth in Broadcasting Corporation.